Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, back again, is Rob Barron for another epic rant. How do you feel, Rob?
Same as last time. Only three more to go.
Are you desensitized at this point?
Yeah. And that's the end of the show. Thank you very much for coming. No. Yeah, I mean, everyone's expecting me to tee off on England again and go through the shortcomings. And that's exactly what I'm going to do because they were rubbish again, but different kinds of rubbish this time, weren't they?
Yeah, we'll get into all that fun stuff. Of course, we will be reviewing the GABA test in this podcast, in which Australia once again defeated England by 8 wickets. They're 2-0 up in the series. And yeah, back-to-back 8-wicket wins. It's looking quite dire for England. Before we get into all of the fun stuff, just wanted to let everyone know that all of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon. And you can become one of them by going to Patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast. That way you can enjoy ad-free content, you can talk to us exclusively, and you can even give us podcast recommendations. So then, Rob, same old story. The difference is that this 8-wicket win came in 4 days as opposed to 2. Australia 2-0 up within 6 days of Ashes cricket. England are a cricket team which obsess over the Ashes. They don't care about the World Test Championship cycle. They look at Test cricket from Ashes to Ashes. And this time it's been quite, it usually is very, very poor from England and Australia, barring 2011 or 2010, 2011. This team was expected to compete a bit more. But I mean, they've pretty much fucked up their chances over here after losing the first 2 test matches.
Yeah, it's not enormously surprising. Like we tore them apart after the first test. Because England threw that test in the bin. Now, this one, they just got stuffed. It was a very different test match. The first one, England had Australia on the rack and then elected to tickle them instead of finishing them and just let them in back into the game, collapsed almost on purpose. It was that bad. And then just handed them a test match, which you cannot do. They did it in the last Ashes, should have won the Ashes, didn't win the Ashes. They did it again in this one. And we said lots of stuff after the first one that it's very unlikely that England win because they're not going to bother preparing. They didn't do any pink ball practice.
Hey. Hold up. Good. Baz McCullum said they were overprepared for this test match.
Well,
so what are you on?
Not for cricket. Maybe they prepared something else. I mean, McCullum is I think he's almost got to the stage, Behram, where he's just trying to get away with how much nonsense he can say in the press. It's like, how long can I keep this job whilst just dismissing everybody that's talking to me? Like, what did he say after the game? He said, yeah, we'll go for some beers now. Now we're going to go on holiday for 4 days. It's a tour of Australia. Like, knuckle down. You're 2-0 down. Stop going on holiday. Like, it's something where the cricket is going absolutely pear-shaped. Have a day off if you want, but not four days off mucking about playing. It's an old trope. You just say they're playing golf. Probably are playing golf. Or their team bonding or whatever. Stokes came off fuming after the first game, and the second game he was almost like it's the stages of grief, isn't it? He's almost in the acceptance stage now already after 2-0 down, and he was just like, "Well, yeah, we were crap, and this is what we did." And he basically said, "I'm gonna have some very harsh words with some people in the dressing room." Well, they've got no one on tour with them, Behram, that's going to swap and make the team particularly better. They invested in Bashir for 3 years with the express purpose of playing in this series.
Yes.
I understand the sunk cost fallacy involved with picking him for this. I wouldn't have picked him 2 years ago. Picked
also
because he's tall. Not
yes, high release point. High release point and two of those surfaces that you get in this, sport, Perth and GABA, where you expect a lot of bounce. And I mean, I'm not saying Bashir would have been the answer, but they were surely prepping him for these 2 test matches that he didn't play. So I just don't understand the logic behind, a lot of their decisions, Stokes and McCullum's decisions. But Shayan, my colleague at Good Areas, he coined it perfectly. He said that Australia managed to out-bazball England and then forced England to play anti-bazball cricket. That's what happens here.
Yeah, and it's the discombobulation of this lot, right? That they've kind of stuck very staunchly to their guns, and you can at least respect that, whether you like it or not. If they're saying, "Look, we're playing this way, and that's it," and England were complete rubbish for quite a long time before McCullum and Stokes, the axis of big strong lads, took over and changed everything. And
yeah,
somebody that has watched England kind of be extremely negative for my entire life and not win because of it, it was fantastic to see some aggression finally. It did all start with the ODI stuff that Farbrace brought in, which is on the ODI World Cup, right? But to then, mid-test, when we've lost, decide, right, Stokes just said, we don't care about the score. Well, that's brilliant because, you never win a test match when you don't care about the score. So we don't care about the score. We're just going to fight, right? That's what he said. So me and Jax, now when the test match batting is at its absolute easiest, we're just going to block for 3 hours or 4 hours or whatever it was, just because we can. And England, I know I tend to bring everything down to odds, but England were 75-1 to win the test match. 1 in 75, England win the test match, basically. before that day, right? Before the last day. Whenever Stokes and Jax had gone off and we'd collapsed and then they came back. And by the end of that innings, where they fought as hard as they could, and Stokes faced 150 balls and Jax faced 90 balls, whatever it was, England were 500-1. And change, more than 500-1 to win the match. That's the time when you're 80-1 or 75-1 to win the test match. That's the time you smack it up the volatility. It was easier to bat, score some bloody runs. That's the time where you whack it. You don't just come out whacking every time Stark gets another spell. Oh, look, let's just try and smack him off this length, driving on the up. Triscothic coming out and saying, isn't he batting coach or assistant coach or something? Presumably there to help guys with their batting. And they said, did you tell them, we've played at Perth and Brisbane where everybody knows you don't drive on the up. Have you told them that? And they're like, no, we haven't really mentioned that one. It's like, I don't play cricket, really, but I know that you don't do that at Perth and Brisbane. And then there's a bloody great big crack, right, on the pitch, visible to everybody. Stevie Wonder could see the crack on that pitch, right? And he just landed on it at 70 miles an hour with the keeper up, Boland and Nisa in their later spells, and England didn't know what to do. And the shot that got most of them out was the stupid drive on the up when it was playing tricks. The bit when the pitch was playing tricks, they all played stupid drives on the up. And when it was flat as anything and the ball wasn't doing anything, they blocked. Like, they've done themselves. They've completely confused themselves. They've gone back on what they said. So now they made all these plans. They've chucked half of them in the bin. The other thing to remember is this Australian team ain't all that. If you said,
yeah,
test two, you've got 35-year-old guy who's bowling half the overs, and then you've got no Lyon, no Cummins, no Hazelwood, and Khawaja's already...
Oh, yeah. Throw in Khawaja as well, because I know he was out of runs and out of form, but not being there, and he hasn't opened in this entire series, even in the previous test he didn't, does destabilize the batting order. That is a point. And then there are no two bigger losses to a test team than Cummins and Hazelwood, right? And then they decide not to play Gazza. So the two test matches where England could have done something, they've stuffed up. And that's got to mean something, because they weren't just losses. They lost by 8 wickets and they were thrashed, right? I mean, the whole psychological blow element we talk about, I feel like how you mentioning that they were confused or they confused themselves, I just feel like they're not even sure how to respond to this. And I mean, Ben Stokes says that Australia is not for weak men. Well, I mean, playing golf for 4 days, that's not going to help, is it? Maybe you'll improve your driving. I mean, at the range.
It's the only shot they shouldn't be doing is the driving. But it's madness, right? Like, so Jamie Smith has had some pelters for his performance in this test match. What I would say is he looked like a guy that had never played pink ball before, which is exactly what he is, right? So why didn't they send him to that game and say, look, Jamie, you're a wicket keeper and you've not kept with a pink ball before. Why don't you have a go at that for a couple of days? You've only got to do it for a day. One day on the tour, please do a bit of that. And you might see, and the thing is, what did he score in this test match? 4 runs combined in the two innings? In the two innings. He's faced half a dozen balls of the pink ball now. So when he plays next time, he ain't going to be any better if he doesn't practice at it. And Carey, who kept magnificently well, I saw some pictures the other day. He's out there 45 minutes before everybody else, practice. And Rob Key, who's the managing director, he's the big boss. He said in an interview, there is absolutely no point in us ever picking anyone who bowls 70 miles an hour or 75 miles an hour with the keeper up, because you never, ever get that in test cricket. So they've already said out loud that they don't prepare for the sort of bowling that they ended up getting stuffed by. The Mitchell Starc 5-4 or 6-4 is completely understandable in isolation. Mitchell start with a ping ball as a gun, and he's a gun anyway, right? He's brilliant, 100 test player. He will go down as a great bowler. He's left arm and he's rapid. So that's fine. You don't have to give him half his wickets, which England have so far. Half the wickets he's got have been throwaways. He's got twice as many wickets as any English bowler so far. He's got 18 already, and half of them have been total giveaways, just driving nonsense balls that they shouldn't do.
That's so okay. Just on that, just on Starkey a bit, because he was player of the match in the previous test match and this match as well. First of all, you know, when Isha Guha asks him that, you know, two back-to-back player of the test, player of the match awards, so you must be satisfied. And he was like, yeah, two wins. So it's clear that where his mind is at. And I agree with you. Look, we all know that Mitch Stark is the pink ball goat. He's the best cricketer to ever play day-night test matches. After this test, he's got, what, 89 wickets in 15 pink ball test matches at 17 apiece. He's averaging nearly 27 with the bat in pink ball tests as well. In this game, he takes 6 for 75, followed by 77 with the bat. He top scores for Australia, mind you. And then he gets, what, 2 for 64, including roots-prized wicket, right? Now, we know Mitch Stark is in ridiculous form. He takes 10 out of 20 wickets of England's in the previous game. And sure, he's going to pluck a few wickets in this one as well. It comes with the territory. But surely you can hold back your aggressive stroke play versus Stark, right? Like, you could do that bit. This is a guy who's enjoying his best ever year in Test cricket in his entire career. He's nearly 36. He's bowling 140 clicks plus consistently. I don't know how he's managing to do that. And now he's just a much better test bowler than before. He's taken his wickets at 16 apiece this year. It is his best ever year. So how does England not manage to get that memo, Rob?
Right, well, exactly. It's a very good point. How do they not know that Mitchell Stark is awesome, right? Because watch a bit of cricket and you'll find out. They've all played against him, or most of them have played against him. It's not a complete surprise. It's not some 16-year-old kid's turned up like Luke Littler in the darts and he's just better than everybody. Like, oh, wow, we didn't know about this. Or Archer when he turned up, or Rashid Khan when you haven't played against him before. What the hell do you do? It's Mitchell Stark. He's played 100 tests. And his numbers, as you've just said, are getting better and better and better. He's almost put in, what has he done, three of his best four bowling performances ever in the last six test matches? It's ridiculous.
I mean, look, he gets that tour of Sri Lanka, and Sri Lanka struggled versus Stark. The West Indies was a fast bowler's paradise, so sure, whatever. But just in the previous test, with the red ball, he's gotten half of your side out, 10 out of 20. You've given him eight more. So he's taken 45% of all English wickets in the series thus far, 18 out of 40. And I mean, he's overtaken Wasim Akram as well as the highest left arm quick wicket taker in test cricket. I mean, he was humble enough to say that Waz is still, you know, the pinnacle. But we're still talking about top three left-handed bowlers in test cricket of all time who are, or in this case, Mitchell Stark, is on a tier. And how can you just not be more wary of that? Well, that's what gets me.
Used to be that Stark was the one that they did target because they had Cummins, Hazelwood and Lyon locking them down at the other end. Now they have zero of those people. So they've got Doggett, who was completely unthreatening again, other than one over that Pope did his absolute best to get out to him and then got out the next over. So Doggett is a guy who is just rolling through overs, pretty easy to play. I don't think he was a threat. His first spell was actually quite good in the first test. But he looks like a guy you can get 4.5 and over against, and he'll get one wicket for every 100 runs or something, right? So that is the basis of where are you going to get your runs? How are you going to set up your team? For the love of God, don't try and smack Mitchell Stark. Don't care how good you think you are. Don't care how good you feel. We lost a test match last time because he tried to whack Mitchell Stark. And I think he's taken a wicket in his first over every time since July, right? He's an absolute lethal weapon in his first over. And if you just had an hour of relative rubbish, right, of Doggett and Boland and Nisa and Cameron Green and Labuschagne and Head, like none of them are any good, you've got to just, oh, look, Mitchell Stark's come back. Now, anyone remember how dangerous he is? Because he's got us all out last time. He's got every single person out that's played for England. He's got 11 of them out already. He's only played two tests. Yeah. Only Archer hasn't got out to him. So they all know. They've all got out to him. It's not like, oh, we've got him twice. No, he's got all of you out. He's back on. Start playing stupid shots. Stop it. And yeah, Brooke is the biggest one for me because he's awesome. So all you need is a brain. And we're not showing any semblance of a brain. He's 26 now, Brooke. He's not a little kid. He averages 55 in tests, Bayram, Harry Brooke.
I mean, take that Pakistan tour out, and I'd love to see the average after that.
I'm not playing those games.
But that was my first ever assignment, by the way, from the ground. So my first day in a press box was 500 plus runs scored in a single day's play. And look where we are today, right? I mean, England's batting is a bit one-dimensional, but I understand what you're trying to say. Now, when I was discussing this with Jared, we were talking about, okay, you know, it's wide off stump. You want to drive at it. Maybe try to drive at it without an angled bat. Maybe don't bring the slips into play, because Starc comes and takes two wickets quickly, right? England are, what, two down for five. Duckett usually just plays that way, so I'm ready, willing to excuse that. And Pope is Pope. Him chopping on is not news. But the Brook and the Will Jacks dismissals, you're literally just gifting him those wickets, right? So there's that. I'm not going to blame Carson and Atkinson either. Sure, Starkey gets them. And Root gets a weird one, right? I feel like he misjudges the length later. That's what gets him. But the Will Jackson, Harry Brook, and Harry Brook dismissal in particular are inexcusable. You can't put it any other way.
So I thought, yeah, the Brook one is mental, because he's happily, you know, going about a run of ball, 31 or 32, I think he was when he got out. And you think, well, he looks good, but he's going to give you a chance. And then Stark comes back on. Huge alarm bells, must behave yourself for a couple of balls, no, flashing drive, out. And Will Jacks, now it's very difficult to say this about somebody that was on 19 or 30. He looked $1 million before Stark came back on for that over. He looked really, really good for his 19. There was an on drive in there. He looked like he was timing everything. It was pinging off the bat. And you think, okay, as a basically, they've picked him, never mind them saying he's a spinner, they picked him as a specialist number eight is what they've done. So he's in there to shore up the extremely long batting that we've got with Carson and Archer at 11.
Rob, they were batting till 11, if you count Jofra, right? Yeah, like, it's batting all the way through. It's Gautam Gambhir on steroids. And Australia, they make some interesting moves on the other hand, right? Like, Head is still opening, so they slot in Josh Inglis for Khwaja, who weirdly bats at 7, but it doesn't matter towards the end. And they sacrifice Nathan Lyon for Michael Nisa to go for a four-pronged pace attack. Slow over rate, don't care. You know, 75 overs a day, it doesn't matter. Australia have also been batting quite fast. I mean, they were batting faster than England in this test match. And they showed us that they have gears. They can play different ways. Whereas England, it was either just shut up shop, block ball, or throw away your wickets. And that is a concern. Because, yes, Australia played really good cricket, but this is the sort of cricket that England should be at least aiming to play.
Well, it's the brainlessness of it all. So just finishing off with Jacks, he chased a wide one from Stark. Now, that in the first innings, that can happen. He chased a wide one and he missed it. So the partner should walk over to him and go, Will, you're playing really well. Just chill out. There's no need to be chasing. It should have been a wide, the one he missed the ball before he got out. It should have been a wide. And he chased after it and he missed it. And you think, you got away with one there. Let's put that shot away. Eh? Next ball, just the same, exactly the same ball. Reached for it, got it, nicked it, bye. Stupid. They're just out-stupiding themselves all the time. And just look at the balls. Like, what Australia did is, when it was easy, they belted it. And when it was hard, they shut up shop. And that's kind of a microcosm of Test cricket, isn't it? What Test cricket can be, and particularly pink ball tests, Australia really good at them, particularly pink ball tests, is when you're going to get very differing conditions across a test match, right? So there are times when you've got to knuckle down and there are times where you can cash in, but you must survive the knuckle down bit so you can get to the cash in bit, whereas England are already all out or they're already doing something stupid. But for them to get it backwards so badly, England, in the second innings and go, right, now's the time for a 400 ball partnership. It wasn't. That was the only time they should have been belting it, probably, in this series, other than the 10th wicket partnership first innings. England got about 50 more than they were in for in that first innings, let's not forget. They did okay. They did all right. One of the many things that pisses me off about this team is, between five of them, one scoring shot in the first inning. They got four runs between five of them. So half of them aren't contributing at all. Joe Root did a good one finally in Australia. But we end up, then it's over to the bowler. They can't join anything up. It's like, if the bats do well, the bowlers do crap, and the other way around. There's 11 of them out there. They don't really look like a cricket team to me. The plans get thrown in the bin quite quickly, or they religiously stick to them when it's going wrong, right? There's no brains anywhere. Somebody must step, like, if we can see it, why can't people that play cricket all their lives and who are really, really good? Like, McCullum, it's not outrageous to say McCullum changed cricket with the way he played it.
Yeah.
And the way he's been since. Why the hell can't they sit back and go, lads, this is the bit where you've got to go, please don't drive. Please relax for a bit. This is the bit where they're like, it was almost sickening how fast Jofra was bowling when the game was finished. And Steve Smith was dead right. Oh, you're bowling really fast now. Are you? Well, you've lost, so that's great for us. And he was just going faster and faster and faster.
His exact words were, bowl fast when nothing's going on, champion. And that must have hurt Joff, because people always talk about that matchup or contest as, you know, a big billing one. But, you know, he might have hit him in the head once, but Jofra still hasn't gotten Steve Smith out. In fact, he tweeted Steve Smith 23 of 9 way back in the day, which is so weird. I still can't explain that one. But yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I'm not even sure what he was playing, you know, because from my memory, back in 2020, 2013, was Smith back in the fold in Australia's plans? Because he probably has a really good 2014. I'm not quite certain. But I mean, he is a bit of a fortune teller, Joff. And you're right in saying that, you know, he scores what, 38 of 36 in the first innings? That 70-run last wicket partnership between Jofra and Joe Root ensures that we have a day four, essentially. So, like, think of this. Crawley scores 76 in his first dig and 44 in his second. He scores 120 runs in a test match. Zach Crawley scores 120 runs in a test match. You should not be wasting that test. Those are bonus runs.
Just look at the application, though, Behram, of the two teams. Scott Boland batted for 2 hours in the first innings. Scott Boland batted for 2 hours. So that must tell you there are bits where it's really easy here. You've got 2 hours of a guy that can't really bat. And like Nisa can bat. And you go, fair enough, the guy, he dug in, he faced 40 balls, he helped his team out. Doggett faced 20 balls, and that used to be, you know, if you can just get 20 balls out of your number 11, your score might go up by 40 if he's managing to do that, if the other guy's doing anything. And they all dug in. What was it? The first time ever 13 was the lowest score in 11. It doesn't sound much, 13. But four of our guys got naught, and one of them got four.
The record, I think, there was like a fun factor around this. I think for the first time in 97 years, you saw an 11 in that innings where Australia score 511, everyone scores in double digits and no one gets a ton. So that's happened after 97 years. And that tells you that everyone's contributing. And this pitch for the vast majority of this test match was a flattish deck. Yes, the cracks opened up at times, which England failed to hit, but Scotty Boland could see them, you know, pretty clearly. And as you mentioned, Stevie Wonder could probably also see them. So it's just poor execution, poor planning. And Nasser Hussain put it really well. He said that England have been out-batted, out-bowled, out-caught and out-thought, right? That's essentially where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, do you want me to go on about catching? Because that's very depressing. That's
You know what? You know what? Let's do that, because that's a long conversation. But before that, we shall be taking a break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Rob Barron and Behram. Maybe we should start calling this show Robbing Mangoes or Mango Robbers. But anyway, we will be back in like half a minute, so go nowhere. There's still lots and lots more to cover. And I cannot find the ad. There it is.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
All right, then. Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Rob Barron and Behram. And Rob mentioned catching before the break. Well, there's something about England. No matter how good a side they take to Australia, they always end up dropping heaps of catches. It was like the ball had pins in it. Maybe the palms had butter on it. Not sure what happened there, because it was what? An innings that lasted 70-odd overs? England dropped 5 catches. And some of these catches don't matter as much. Some of them do. For instance, Inglis, he's dropped by Ben Duckett at like second or third slip. Second slip. They never had a third slip. Yeah. And he was on 21. Gets cleaned up 2 runs later by Stokesy in the same over. Fine. No issues. Nisa's dropped by Kaas on 6. Okay, he ultimately does bad time, but fine, not the end of the world. Travis Head getting dropped early on by Jamie Smith when he was on 3. I know he only scores 33, but those 30 runs are not what was lost. England lose a big advantage over there because early wickets are, you know, essential. And then Alex Carey, he eventually scores 63 runs, but he was dropped on 0 at gully by Ben Duckett. And then once again, on 25, when it was pretty much Jamie Smith's catch, but Root tries to pull off a Smith and fails, essentially. no one-handed take for him. That's five drop catches, where on the other hand, Australia were like supermen in the field. Nisa dropped a cotton ball and there was a very difficult chance for Travis headed short leg. But other than that, they caught everything. They forced a run out, the Josh Inglis run out. There was one catch in which, you know, Alex Carey and Manus Labuschagne were practically making out while they caught the ball. The Manus catch, the Smith catch. On one hand, you have a team which was excelling in the field and catching like crazy. On the other hand, England couldn't even catch a cold, barring Will Jacks, perhaps, because that was a specky.
Well, yeah, that's this team, though, isn't it? Like one moment of outlandish brilliance and the rest of them are just awful. And that's what it was in the field. To be fair, Root got dropped really early on. I think he might have been on naught. He got dropped early, had a life, tough chance. But take that and England get rolled in 3 days again. Catching is something that's really easy if you're a professional athlete. There is no excuses. Catching is very easy. It's an easy, practicable skill. Throw a ball at somebody thousands of times, and if they've got good hand-eye, which is very difficult not to have good hand-eye if you're a professional cricketer, they're going to become very, very good at it. So you practice over and over again. England do practice a lot with their fielding. I've seen it myself. They do practice a lot with their fielding. I'm not sure how much they've done with the pink ball, and they must be able to do some sort of practice, which I don't think they do, which replicates what you get out there. I know they do stuff like they play crowd noise and then stuff one into the sky and try and wind them up, all that sort of stuff. Fine, great. But it's clearly some kind of concentration issue. You know, the cast one, that should never be dropped. And when you're second favourites, when you're the worst of the two teams, you can't drop catches. You must take all of them. You've got to take the difficult ones, never mind the easy ones. So easy ones can't go down. Sort your hands out if your hands are sweaty. Dry them. You know, you're allowed to have a towel in your pocket if you want to. Loads of ways you cannot have wet hands when the ball's chipped to your midriff, right? And it's so hard to drop a catch that is just lobbed to your stomach. Like my 8-year-old daughter catches those, right? So it's not a practice thing, I don't think. It's all here. So they're just dumb and they're not concentrating enough. This has got all the, I had it in the first test when we threw the test completely in the bin. It's got all the hallmarks of total disarray. Imagine banking your whole reputation and brand and all these other rubbish words for what they're doing, whacking it everywhere, on an away series in Australia where we always get stuffed anyway. But that's what they've done. And there's no way that the heads don't roll if we get smashed again. And they're all coming out and saying, well, we have to believe that we can win 3-2. Of course you have to believe it.
I mean, Piers Morgan believes.
Well, I'm not talking about that clown. His opinion is entirely irrelevant on cricket and everything else in the world. But yeah, sure. I mean, England can come back. England came back last time. But the difference was last time is they were at home and they had a lot of bats in form and they were playing on English pitches and knew the conditions. They got more than double, I think, or double the amount of sixes Australia got. Australia are scoring quicker than England. Australia scored more sixes than England. They're doing all the stuff England want to do, but they're just not being stupid while they do it. And I keep going back to this.
Well, there was one instance where they were a bit stupid. It was towards the end of day two where Green and Smith were going brilliantly and all of a sudden they decide to attack and that's where there's a flurry of wickets. And at that point, I thought that was quite unnecessary because the plan should have been simple. You bat up until the evening session the next day. Weirdly enough, despite losing the wickets, they managed to do that.
Well, this is the thing that I keep coming back to. This team isn't that good. The Australian team is missing three of their four bowlers. Three of them are gone. Take England's best three bowlers out. They haven't got any players left. Like, who's playing
well,
then?
Who are England's best three bowlers, Rob? Because in this test match, you know, Cass takes four wickets but goes for 152 runs. He was getting pelted. The head wicket is gifted to him. Sure, he kind of double bluffs Cam Green and gets him cleaned up on a Yorker. I'll give him that one. And other than that, Steve Smith should have never hooked that ball. There was a fielder, short, fine leg, and one in the deep. And he's bowling you short deliveries. That's clearly the plan. You've just lost a wicket. I mean, those four wickets you have to take with an ounce of salt. And then Stokes, he was bowling a lot of full tosses. 3 for 113 for him in 24 overs and Cass bowled 29. So combined, these guys take 7 for 265. And England themselves were 9 down for 264 in the first innings, right? So if those are their best bowlers, then you've got an issue. They didn't hit the right lengths, England's seamers, at all. I feel like they were married to that back of a length or hard length and they failed to hit the cracks. Jofra wasn't used properly by Stokesy. Surely you leave some gas in the tank for the afternoon session or the evening session, pardon me. That wasn't done properly. And then, of course, like he's getting sledged by Smudger towards the end. They missed Jimmy Anderson on a surface which would have aided him. And Australia's bowlers were Jimmy-esque. Like they were like traditional English seamers, right? In Nisa and Dog. like, and Scotty Boland. And then again, the field settings were weird, man. There was one point where Alex Carey has offered you two chances on bumpers, and you don't have any fielders behind the back packed on the offside. He's giving you chances. Steve Smith continues to plunder runs in the third man region. Third slip was nowhere to be seen. And the amount of times I've seen a ball go through that gap for four was like a lot of times. I mean, where did the intelligent Stokesy go who manufactured, you know, dismissals? I get that he's outstoked himself in the sense that there were some calls that we don't really associate it with him because he won the toss twice and elected to bat twice. Never happened before, I believe, in the baseball era. And then there was no declaration when England were like 9 down for 264, which I was really scared of. I was like, he's totally going to declare here. But I mean, I was really, really underwhelmed, you know, by the plans. And it's just that they didn't understand that, okay, Stark is there. Let's search for a wicket. Let's bowl full. Let's target the stumps. Jake Weatherall is clearly a player who is very strong off his back foot. He's going to cut till eternity. He'll throw his hands on width, any sort of width.
Yeah.
He goes on, goes a maiden test half century, 45 balls, what, 72 of 78. Full credit to Jake Weatherall, but they're really feeding him. Then you're feeling like feeding Stark spin overs where he can just slog sweep. The amount of times we've seen Mitchell Stark go for a loosest drive and get bowled, or hole out to mid-off or mid-on. Try that. Search for a wicket. That acceptance thing you talk about. Clearly, had they at least attempted to bowl Australia out early on day three, and maybe this lead was 77 as opposed to 177, perhaps they could have dreamt, right?
Well, just do some thinking. That's what England have to do. And they're not exhibiting any signs of that. So the last Ashes series that finished 2-2, which was probably fair enough, we said at the time it was a team with no brains against a team with no bollocks, basically. And it ended up being a draw. You could say that, you know, Oz got lucky with the rain or whatever. But this time, England are just rolling over. And then they're not putting up. You have to make the other team beat you at least. And you look at some of the innings, like that Stark, you know, when he's done his, he scored his test 50s in the past, it's normally he's just whacked it and it's come off. He got, what did he get, 50 off 100? Like, he was batting like a batsman because that's what the situation demanded. You think, oh, well, that was a good shot. Oh, look, he's gone 7 dots in a row. If these clowns from England face 4 dots in a row, the massive drives come in next ball. That's all you have to do is just join up a few dots and they go, well, I'm going to whack it now because that's what they're programmed to do. And then Stokes comes out.
Even when Crawley is batting well, you're always kind of on the edge of your seat because there's so many plays and misses. There's so many oohs and ahs. You feel like he's going to nick the next one. I mean, that's the experience, right? That's why it's on my bucket list now to watch a Crawley innings in Test cricket with you over a pint. Hopefully that happens this summer.
Well, he'll still be in the team unless everybody gets changed. I mean, to be fair, he did all right in the Test match. As you say, he got 120 runs. He did fine. We haven't spoke. The worrying thing about Jofra, right, so we basically banked on three guys and we hoped other people would turn up for this Ashes series. And we did everything we can. And Jofra was one of them. He had to work extremely hard to get his body ready for Test match cricket again. And it isn't ready. You can see that. So Jofra has sacrificed half of his career. The guy's played 17 tests and he's a generational talent. He's 30 years old. Mainly because England is stupid. Right from the very start, this isn't blood on Stokes' hands or McCullum's hands here, but in 2019 against New Zealand when he bowled 42 overs in a game that we lost by an innings, and he had a bad elbow at the time. So they've been ruining him since day one. I'd be very surprised if Jofra plays any more test matches after this series. He may have even played his last if he's knackered now. I'd be very surprised if he carries on, because why would you? Why the hell would you when you just get these clowns dropping catches off you all the time and they go, Joff, can you bowl it? You saw how angry he was by the end. It's completely understandable. He gets no support. The other one was Wood, and he's always injured. And he got injured again because his body's not ready to play test cricket because they abuse him all the time. Fine. And then they made him come back on in the World Cup when he was injured and re-injured him when everybody knew that he was injured. They made him come back on. So they killed him, killed Jofra. And the other one was Bashir, who they don't pick. So what are you doing? Where's the plans? And they're not coming out and saying, we've got some brains. Sorry, go on, mate.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to interject because Jared is making the case that England just didn't understand that pitches in Australia have changed. Like, this is a great attack for maybe Australia 5 years ago where the pitches are going to be flat and hard, right? But here you're seeing lots of seam movement off the deck. Scotty Boland is better than any English seamer, right, in this contest. And he only takes three really good wickets, mind you, in this test match. But he's not even successful, right? Like, and he's better than any English seamer. So that begs to ask the question that, you know, oh, wobble seam is working? Seam off the deck? Who is the best exponent of the wobble seam delivery in history? Is it an Englishman? Is it someone who we have forcefully retired? Those are the things that kind of really fluster you or frustrate you, because I don't think they understood that cricket in Australia has changed. And that was, I think, Jared's biggest point when he was reviewing this game.
Yeah, and that was part of the grand plan, was kicking our best ever fast bowler into touch and saying, you're not going to be there for the Ashes, so you can't carry on playing cricket, when he was our best bowler. And then the other best bowler buggered off because he got fed up that they kicked his mate out, right? So we lost two of them, two of the best ever. We lost in 5 minutes because the people that run the team are idiots. And they're proven idiots, and they're coming out and they're saying idiotic things. And they're now, like they do everything wrong. And how on earth do you keep your job if you're the boss, when every day you come out and you say silly things, the team does sillier things, and then they lose? And they go, do you know what we're going to do now? And you're like, well, are you going to bollock them? And are you going to tell them that you must grow a brain when you play test match cricket? Because test cricket is really, really hard. So you have to give them a chance. But no, we're going for a beer and then we're going on holiday. That's what we're going to do.
Of course. Golf is important. Whiskey, cigars, beers, they're all very, very important. And look, I'm fine with them taking a day off, as you said, but like, you can't just skip the honest conversation. I hope they've had it, because I mean, they definitely need it. Plus, my biggest concern is that how do England take wickets this series, right? Like, the bowling attack looks quite, I wouldn't even say underwhelming, just not set up to perform well in these sort of conditions. That's what it kind of comes down to. And then, you know, what's their best moment with the ball this test match? Where Cass gets two wickets in an over, which should have been three. And those are, like, both those wickets are mistakes by Australian batters, if you think about it as well. So that's the major concern, that if Stokesy and Cass were your best bowlers, then it's just not a lot of, I don't know, encouragement. And like you said, Wood is always injured. They haven't tried Josh Tung yet, and his best ball might be great, but he can be very erratic. He can go for plenty, right?
He's there as the tail hoover, and I would have picked him in this test. I would have picked him in this test because I think the reason why they didn't pick the tail hoover is because they thought the tail was that bad now that they didn't need to. No Pat Cummins and you know, no one's going to hang around. Well, they all hung around, didn't they? And they got a load of runs with the tail. Mitchell Starc got 77 runs. And
everyone got double digits.
We didn't have a tail hoover, and they're all facing loads of balls. At least the Lions did well. You know, they got beaten by an innings and 127 runs. And how did Bashir go? 25 overs, two maidens, none for 115, going at 4.6 and overs. So that's good. We got that to fall back on. Josh Hole went for 5.72 and over. Did get three wickets. Only went for 100 runs in his 18 overs, 103. And they all got rolled, other than my man, Asa Tribe, got 129 not out in the second innings because
he's playing
a super gun. Yes.
So is Asa Tribe then the Pope replacement long term? Because the worrying thing over here is that Pope gets starts. When he gets starts, he usually does all right. And he might have one of the worst ever second batting innings averages, which is like 20 odd. But generally, he either goes early or he gets a start and converts it. This is new. He's gotten starts and he hasn't converted them.
Because his brain's fried, Bayram. His brain is fried. So this is what happens a lot, as you said. He got bowled by Mitchell Starc early in his innings, first innings, didn't he? That can happen because Pope's a rubbish starter. And you don't mind, look at Marcus North's numbers, you don't mind somebody being a rubbish starter per se if they make up for that by getting boatloads of runs when they're set or they look good. You're like, right. Like Khawaja's a bit like that too. If it used to be, not old man bad back Khawaja, but the good Khawaja was like, if he's faced 50 balls, you're bang in trouble now. Like you've had your chance and he ain't getting out for the, you know, another session or two at least. And Pope was either feast or famine. And now that innings the other day where he's like, I nearly got out. What shall I do? Same thing. Oh, I'm out. Never mind. That's unforgivable. You can't bat like that. So he's got, but with these clowns, like, to be fair, at least Tribe, who has played, I watch a ridiculous amount of cricket, and I watched him play for Jersey, and I've watched him play in the county stuff. He looks the first time I saw him, I was like, he was brilliant, but he didn't show me anything as far as gears go. And then I saw him do a 75 run last wicket partnership where he scored 74 of them or something, tonking it everywhere. I was like, oh wow, this guy's good. Then he's playing in a different format the next day, scores another unbeaten 100. He is in ludicrous, incredible form, and he has the exact game for test match cricket because he knows when to play shots and when to put them away, right? And he's a kid, so he could be awesome. However, no offense to the guy, but he looks like a nice, normal, slightly geeky lad, right? I don't know what he's like. He might be an absolute booze hound for all, and I've got no idea. But he looks like a normal guy, whereas Bethel has got the cool thing that they really like, because when Bethel looks good, he looks amazing because of how he holds the bat and the noise it makes when it comes off the bat. He doesn't play good very often because in the most important bit of his career right now, as far as developing going, they make him carry drinks all the time. So he doesn't get any better at cricket because he's not allowed to play cricket when he should be developing. At least try plays all the time and scores loads of runs everywhere. But Bethel is the one that will replace Pope because he's the next, you know, cab from the stupid rank that will pick some passengers up in a minute. They're going to have to make changes. The bowlers are knackered and not bowling well. But you look at the Australia A drubbing when I think Bartlett got a load of runs, didn't he? Like, what are you doing? Like, so it's not like they can go, oh, look, this guy's ripping it up on the tour. Why not give Tribe a go when you're 4-0 down and blood him a bit? You know, guys. But when you've got Root and Stokes, who are supposed to be brilliant cricketers, they never won a test. And they're the brains trust, those two. They never won a test in Australia. And despite having Australia by the throat in the first one, they don't look like getting much closer, do they?
No.
What are they going to do between now and then, Bayram? How are they going to fix it? I don't see it.
I don't want to fault those two guys too much. I mean, Stokes has some captaincy howlers, sure, I'll say that. But, you know, in his first batting innings, he had done the hard bit. He had survived Mitchell Stark's spell. And then he gets run out. Chances, you know, a run on Josh Inglis's arm, the spare wicketkeeper, and he gets him run out. Second innings dismissal was a terrific job by Alex Carey, who that was like one of the best displays of wicketkeeping I've seen, right? Like standing close up and taking those stakes so comfortably. Scores runs in this test match as well. But, you know, 19 in the first innings and then that dogged 152 ball 50 in the second batting innings. It wasn't the worst effort. Takes 3 wickets for 113 as well. But the issue over here is that what is the ethos of Ben Stokes right now in this team? Like, is he that versatile guy who's going to play the situation? Because he hasn't baz-balled much in the baz-ball era. That's one weird thing, right? And why is he still batting at 5 is my question, right? Because he clearly is maybe a better bowler these days than he is batter. So perhaps just then play that role ahead of Will Jacks. Maybe you can be the number 8, right?
Completely fair. I don't think he'll do that because he wants the responsibility. Like Travis Head has scored 200 runs in this series, 199 or something. Strike rate 109. Ben Stokes fighting fire with fire there. He scored 77 runs at strike rate 34. 34 his strike rate is. And when Bazball started, Stokes basically said, I'm going to lead this from the front. So he came in any situation and just tried to hoof it. That is not his game. His game is do go through the gears from first to fifth. Headingley is the example, the one everyone remembers. Didn't play a shot for a whole evening before to set himself up for that innings, that incredibly lucky innings that got England over the line in a test match. But then since, I think it's this year, this calendar year, 2025, he hasn't played a shot. So what's he up to then? Because he comes out and say, well, we're not going to change for everybody. There's so many contradictions with what they say and what they do. Because Stokes says, you know, we don't give a monkey's what the media thinks. We don't care what the media says and we're not going to listen to anybody else. But apparently he never stops reading it and never stops listening to what everybody says in the media, and which is why the toss decisions started changing. Bear in mind, we won both tosses in this, England, and made the correct decisions. So that's quite an important thing. You know, I mean, in India don't know how to win tosses. Genuine million to one to lose as many of those lost in a row. Anyway, they just like, do not help.
334 was still underwhelming in the first innings because, you know, England were well set at so many different times and the pitch was flat. The cracks hadn't opened up. They start opening up day 3. So, yes, had they caught their 5 catches, perhaps, you know, the lead could have been less. Had they set a target of, I don't know, 265 or 215 rather than 65, maybe they had a shot at it, even though I'm kind of skeptical with the bowling that they've shown us. I still feel that, you know, it's just that they say they're over-prepared, but to me, execution is like way ahead. The planning was off. It's like they didn't know what to do or how to defeat Australia. And it's just some really baffling sort of decision making.
Well, that has to be a joke, doesn't it? The we overprepared, if anything. That's just like, how daft a thing can I possibly say in the aftermath of this latest hammering?
I studied so hard that I failed my exam.
yeah, there you go. It's exactly that. And all right, I would have said, thank you, Brendan, for preparing them so well. Where was the evidence that they prepared? What did Jamie Smith do to prepare in that test match? I don't want to hang the guy out to dry because I think he's been absolutely superb in his England career so far. In all the formats that he's played, I think he's been superb. But he went for it in the first test. I think he got sawn off in the second innings. But the first innings, he got caught on the rope when everyone else was collapsing. Fair enough. It's going to happen when you're the Gilchrist guy. But he looked like a guy that never played pink ball cricket before when he played in this one because that's what he is. And that is something that the management can help with. Go, oh, look, you've never played this before. We're going to send you away. You can book cricket grounds. They've got loads of money. You can book cricket grounds and you can practice under lights with a pink ball. And you can go, well, actually, wouldn't it be a good idea to practice with our bowlers as well? Let them bowl. Had a game sorted, couldn't be asked to play in it because they would much rather prepare him. They're saying they're preparing for camaraderie, was it? Camaraderie and something else? That's what Stokes said between the tests. And then, as soon as the test match finished, he said, oh, well, we had certain players that let us down. We're weak men, basically. So what was it then? So you didn't bother practicing. You got stuffed. And then you said you were doing it for morale and team building. And then you come out and say, well, all the players are at fault. Where's the morale in that? So what the hell happens? You can't go to the Lions and pick their players other than Tribe, which they definitely won't. Because they're getting just as smoked as you are, doing the exact same stupid things. The scorecard's basically the same. Well, now what do? You can't sack them all now. So what's going to happen is they've lived by this silly sword. They'll die by it. And it would be way beyond surprising if England turned this series around. It's possible. Adelaide's a better pitch, normally. Traditionally, you know, it's a bit slower, isn't it? It doesn't play tricks like... Bear in mind, as you said, Bairam, that pitch didn't play tricks from much of it. It's just whenever it did play tricks, England tried to drive straight through the line of the ball on the up. It wasn't playing tricks for quite long spells, but England didn't get to those spells. But if Archer was belting it everywhere, why can't any of the batsmen get in?
I mean, he was the third best batter in the first innings. But anyway, there was one English batter who did ridiculously well in this test match. We'll come to him after a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Bairam and Rob. And go nowhere because we'll be back with you in like 40 seconds.
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things, the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it, and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny sims and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Rob Barron and Bairam, and we are currently reviewing England's 8 wicket thrashing at the hands of Australia in the Gabba test. They're 2-0 down. And the one ray of hope perhaps over here might be Joe Root. Finally scores that elusive maiden test done on Australian soil. 40th 100 in the format overall. Out and out legend. I mean, not scoring 100 on this tour wouldn't have diminished his legacy, but this has definitely elevated it, scoring the 100. And sure, gets out of 15 later, but... you know, first innings was terrific, unbeaten on 138. But the only positive that I can really take out from this in the real world is that Joe has saved us from Matty Hayden's route, right? Like, he won't be dancing around the MCG with his mongoose out. I mean, we should have been talking up this 100, but it's just the nature of the loss has taken the sheen away from it.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest crimes this England team have done here is kind of thrown Root's only Oz 100 in the bin, really, by the rest of them clowning around and all getting ducked. He played really well, but Joe Root's really, really good at cricket and he still hasn't won a test match in Australia, and that's not necessarily his fault. It's a lot of other people contribute to that as well, but he did play really nicely. I thought Jack's played quite well across the two innings. Joffre slogged a few. Crawley played well. Like, you're having guys that are quite good at cricket playing well.
Surely some of those batters could have taken some inspiration from the way Joe Root batted, right?
Well, I'd like to see them take some inspiration off some lesser names that are doing it in world cricket at the moment. We spoke about Kamfer last time, right? Kamfer faced 259 balls undefeated to do his best for his country, his adopted country, to do his best for his team, right? And he stuck in for 259 balls and they lost the game. And you go, but that guy can come off. And his teammates will take so much from that and go, well, wow, what a great effort. You just wouldn't get out. You stuck in there. Who else did that this week? In a team that is an absolute shambles. Ask Michelle next time you speak to him. The West Indies are in all sorts of disarray. And they drew a test match from nowhere. You know, and if it had gone on another few hours, they might have even won it. They drew a test match from nowhere because one of their senior guys, who isn't even a bat, said, you aren't getting me out. Kemar Roach, he just blocked. You should be able to teach people to just block, even if you've got no shots. You know, most of the balls don't hit the stumps anyway. Certainly bloody don't win England.
I mean, to be fair, Stokesy does kind of do that. He doesn't face as many deliveries as Kemar. He faces 152, but gets hit in the nuts as well. Another one of those test matches. I agree with you. Perhaps at that point, they should have attacked a bit, but I feel that at least England might have considered, you know, playing test cricket in phases now, because before that it was far too one-dimensional, whereas Australia showed us gears. And West Indies showed us, like, ridiculous resistance. Like, they batted nearly 2 days.
Where's that gone? Resistance? Because it used to be... So England go on about this big strong men thing. That's their brand, right? You know, we've got big muscles and we've got tattoos and we spend all our time in the gym or on the golf course and not actually getting better at cricket, which is what I would like to see from them. Get better at cricket. I don't care what you look like. You get Kemar Roach standing there and facing 290 balls across two innings. He was not out in both innings, right? And West Indies got an extremely unlikely draw. If England are going to win any of these test matches, we've got to the bit now. The first test, it was like 55-45 or something. Now, England are already, you know, 1-in-4 type price. The market has fallen out of love with them. England faced 192 balls in their first innings of the first test, and then they faced 202 balls in the second. That's the whole team. I know it's different pitches and different opposition, but Kemar Roach is facing 290. If you're a big, strong lad, it used to be that the games that you couldn't win, you did your absolute best to draw. And some of my favourite memories of watching England and watching Test cricket back in the day was when a team knows they can't win, but you're sure as hell not going to get us out. Look at what AB de Villiers has done in his career. He can go, you ain't getting me out today. So what I'm going to do is I'm not playing the drive. I'm definitely not going to play the sweep. I'm not going to play the reverse sweep. I'm going to block. I'm really good at blocking. AB de Villiers can play every shot in the book. I was having this conversation with one of the guys that I worked with the other night. Play every shot in the book. But when he wanted to draw a match for his team because they couldn't win, didn't have enough time to win, he just blocked. And he was able to do that. This England team never do that. The only time they did block was when they couldn't possibly save the game. They did it almost to spite themselves. So they've now, not only are they crap, they've totally lost their brains. Like, they've no idea what they should be doing. And this setup will get the rest of this series. And then if they get stuffed 5-0 again, heads will roll and they'll have to start again. But where are you starting from with this lot? Like, what does...
I mean, like, who do you bring in, right? Maybe it's the Roo brothers. Maybe it's Asa Tribe. Perhaps Haseeb Hameed, county champion. I mean, you're not looking at a lot of talent depth over there. Like, the depth chart isn't amazing. The bowling depth chart is even worse, if you think about it. What are we looking at? Sonny Baker? Like, that's not going to work right now, right? There's some evidence for that. And, I mean, I'm just underwhelmed because I felt like this was baseball with brains and then we didn't get to see any brains and then it was just some really weird tactics, whereas Steve Smith was far more aggressive in his captaincy and Australia were like, I've never quite seen them bat this way since Pat Cummins took over, right? Like, this is unlike them. So I don't know what England have kind of, you know, really like where if I had to go to a or find a root cause, where was the plot lost? I can't quite pinpoint it because there's so many fuck ups.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, Australia are only going to get better with Cummins back, you know, and I'm not sure about Hazelwood because his rehab went wrong. And England, like, coming back from 2-0 down, it's only been done once. The Bradman team in 36-37 that won 3-2. And I think Bradman scores a ton in each of those three test matches. And it's disappointing also because you see, you know, a host of English fans in the packed houses, right? It's a great place to watch cricket. The stadia are full and the Barmy Army are still singing. But how long will they sing?
Yeah, I mean, they'll sing a lot because they're always drunk. But part of this is you say, where did it go wrong? It has to start with the management, and Stokes is part of that. But when you see who they're developing and who they give central contracts to and why. So they do justify these decisions. You know, like Rob Key came out and said, there's absolutely no point in getting anyone that bowls 75 miles an hour. Because no one does that in Test cricket. Guy that bowls 75 miles an hour just got a fiver in an important Ashes game for the other team. So well done there.
Yeah. And Nisa, by the way, is 36 years of age himself.
Because
one for 43. All their bowlers are injured. Maiden 5-wicket haul for him, 5 for 42. I mean, I know Bharat Sundaresan is a great fan, but Nisa felt quite lucky that he got another test match, and he might even win a couple more caps this way because he's justified his selection. But, like, he's the sort of guy that England used to have in 1995, right? Like, essentially.
Basically, a county bowler. That's what happened. And when you used to go and watch county cricket, there would be somebody bowling 70 miles an hour with the keeper up everywhere, like for half the day. So England have forgotten how to do that. So let's have a look at what they did with the central contracts. Josh Hull, as always there or thereabouts, when he played, he wasn't ready. He got picked because he's tall. Bashir got given the main spinner's job at the expense of people who are, you know, actually getting county teams, for example. This guy might not play first-class cricket again. Is that impossible? Do you know what I mean? He's a guy you're going, oh, look, England are playing in the World Cup. Let's see who the best player we can find in League Two is and give him a run because he's fast or because he's got big muscles or whatever. Just nonsense. He's a tall guy. He's not very good, but never mind. And then Sonny Baker. Now, Sonny Baker, they haven't, you know, they say he's quick. He's bowled 11 overs in international cricket and he's none for 128 in those 11 overs. And he got central contract. Like, if you get the biggest jobs, you must have shown that you're worthy of them. And it's not Sonny Baker's fault. If England asked me to play next week and say, I'll give you a central contract, you get 800 grand a year, I am off. My notice is handed in and I will be rubbish. But it's not their fault for playing. But why is he in the team? Sonny Baker is a cool name, right? Maybe it's that. He has bowled fast, but he hasn't bowled fast and got loads of wickets. But they've actually said, Key said at the start of all this, it's not about how many wickets you take, it's about how fast you bowl. And that culminated with Jofra, our greatest hope 10 years ago, Jofra bowling as fast as he possibly could and Steve Smith laughing at him and whacking him into the stands. And we lost the test. That's where we've got to with this team. They are a parody of themselves. They're a bunch of clowns and they're only 24-1 to win the Ashes. Good luck if you put money on that. All the best.
England had the only centurions throughout this test, whether it was with bat or ball, right? That's where they were at. And I mean, if you look at Australia, on the other hand, sure, you know, they feeded Jake Weatherall exactly what he wanted. Short and wide stuff, which he can just throw his hands at. But you got to give credit to the man. He was playing his second test match. He's not, you know, a young boy. He's done the hard yards and he's there on merit. So 45 ball, half century for him. First time in test cricket and 72 of 78. Lovely. Unbeaten on 17 later. Steve Smith is in form and he is, you know, the captain of this team currently as well with the Chanderpaul black tapes or whatever. 61 in his first dig where he throws away his wicket essentially. You didn't get him out. That's just Smith gifting you his wicket. And then 23 off 9 unbeaten as Jofra tweeted all those years ago. He's yet to be dismissed by Jofra Archer also. So people need to remember that. But the one guy I just really want to discuss over here because, you know, Carey gets dropped twice. So that 63 comes with caveats. And Stark 77 is also totally gifted by England in many ways. But Manus... what the hell is up with Manus versus the pink ball? He's like Stark with the bat in pink ball or day-night test matches. Ninth 50-plus score now. He's batted 17 times, so 9 out of 17. Four of those nine scores are tons. In this test, he also scores 65 in his first dig, and then he scores the only single-digit score for Australia in this entire test match after that, three. But yeah, he's averaging 60-plus, and he's only... batted 17 times and he's got 1,000-plus runs as well. Jared, when I asked him what explains this, he said that perhaps, you know, he just spots the ball better, he picks it up better. But what's your take? Why is Manus, someone who was out of runs and now has scored back-to-back 50s in the Ashes series, what's up with him versus the pink ball?
It's a good question. I think maybe it's that. Maybe he sees it better. They all say you can't see the seam after a certain amount of time. But also, he's really good at blocking, Manus. So when... the conditions are tough, he will put all the shots away. He just says, no, this is too hard. I'm just going to block and leave and block and leave. And eventually you're going to bowl me a chip ball and I'll put it away for four. And that's kind of how he went about his business. He wasn't flailing away. The fact he got a run of ball 50 in the first test is still annoying me now. But that knock in the first innings there, he just played well, didn't he? Just played good cricket shots. He's good at cricket. It's fine. The fact that coming into this series, enormous question marks over him. And you think in the first innings of the first test, you're like, oh, he's got stuck here. You know, remember those times when it looked like England might win a cricket match? It wasn't that long ago. And it was like, oh, well, we've got Marnus on toast. He's forgotten how to score again. This is going to be great. He survived the tough bits. He got his runs in the second innings, making the bowlers look really silly. Possibly because England's bowlers are that unready, for want of a better word, for test match cricket, that their third spells are crap because they're knackered. And that seemed to be a thing, didn't it? And the thing is, the bats are only lasting 50 overs, not even that in the first test match. They're not giving the bowlers enough of a break. The bowlers have to do half the bloody batting now anyway. So
also, they know that the quicks or express quicks will be more potent under lights, and they won't leave any gas in them for that spell. There's that angle as well. So, yeah.
They just go, Joff, bowl as fast as you can. And he goes, right, I will, no problem. Bang, 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 bang. Oh, I'm really tired because I've only managed to play 17 test matches. Mitchell Starc has got 100 tests in the tank. And he did look a bit tired by the end, but he's nearly 36. Joff should be fresh as a daisy with hardly playing. Again, same lad I was talking to, Neil Ives, does a lot of work for the company I work for. He was saying that, why wouldn't you, if you're Jofra, just say to Mumbai, MI, right? I'll play Mumbai Indians, I'll play MI London, and I'll play MI Cape Town or whatever it is. Give me $2 million a year. Cheers. And he can be fit as a fiddle, bowl his four overs, whack the odd 20, be really good at catching, which he is. That'll do him. Why would you put yourself through the mill for half the money and playing for a team that doesn't respect you? It looks like they don't respect Jofra the way they've treated him since he came in, really.
I feel like they look at him as this X-factor bowler who can dig them out of a hole. And, I mean, his body's not built to play test cricket. That's quite evident.
Yeah, well, he was carrying injuries at the start of his test career and they bowled him into the ground. And luckily, they managed to get him when he was fit for the World Cup. But remember, they bought him in at the expense of a proper servant over the previous 3 years. Like, they're ruthless and stupid. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I would be surprised if he carries on playing test after this.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got some super chats before we end the show, and I do have a hard stop in 5 minutes, so we'll have to go through these quickly. Apologies, everyone. First up, we've got Neutral Standpoint, my brother or sister or, you know, sibling from Canada. Not trying to associate any gender, but he or she or they ask, Root was dropped on two on Starc's bowling. England would have lost by an innings had that catch been taken. Athers, Nass, Rob are enablers. Total gong show. I mean, why have you thrown Athers and Nass in this? What have they done? If anything, Athers has scored that sort of a knock that this team cannot play when he saves the test match versus South Africa. Look, commentators can't be kind of thrown into the mix, but yeah, sure, you can call Rob Key an enabler. And we did talk about that drop. I think Rob Barron brought it up. Oh, damn, you are Rob Key's namesake. How does that make you feel?
I'm fine. That's okay. He's allowed.
Are you Rob Locke?
He's allowed to have the same first name as me. That's fine.
Anyway, next super chat, we've got Abhilash. He asks, I work for a really big tech company, I think Big Five. Every sprint we do, retrospect to not repeat mistake. It is not rocket science. It just takes common sense, which this England brain's trust lacks. I mean, whenever any team repeats mistakes, it is a very, very frustrating watch.
Yeah, the thing is, it's almost like, it's not like they don't learn from the mistakes, it's they double down on the mistake. They go, well, this didn't work, let's try it again, but faster. That's it.
Yes. And what will fix it is a pint. Yeah. All right. And some golf swings. Sankalp asks, one good thing from England's shellacking. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Sorry. Good shellacking? Word.
Yeah, shellacking. Yeah.
I don't know. Rob's rant. Bring him as often as possible. You know what? I might have Rob on this show for every test review. I feel like the response has been great. We love him at Good Areas, and we do need that sort of energy here as well, because Jared will get too academic with this shit. Sometimes all we need is emotion.
Yeah, his opinion doesn't count anyway because he's Australian. But thank you, Mum, for texting in.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right, who do we have next? We've got Foxawan. He says, all England needed was a Mohammed Abbas type bowler who hammers one spot again and again. South Africa's top five struck at 40 strike rate, old school counts. I mean, yeah, that was what we've learned in this series, that England would have done better if they could get some wobble seam bowlers who could get the ball to seam off the deck. And Mohammad Abbas, I mean, maybe they should have taken the Jofra Archer route with Mohammad Abbas, because clearly Pakistan don't want to play him, right?
Yeah. Why is that? Why is that, Bayram? Why doesn't he hasn't?
I have no clue. Because Pakistan is obsessed with pace as well. And apparently Mohammad Abbas has lost a yard of pace. Yeah. Clearly, you know, if someone can take his wickets at Trent Bridge with a Kookaburra ball and win the county championship, that is not proof enough that they can take wickets in Pakistan. The maths doesn't math.
Well, we can't get into Pakistan the way that that cricket board runs the show. Because, you know, we've all got to go to.
Yeah.
This is
we should
great
do
question,
a parallel show.
That's a brilliant question.
We should do parallels between England and Pakistan someday, because both sides haven't won a test match in Australia for 17 tests now. So, yeah, well, England have drawn a few. Pakistan have just plain lost. Andy, with the last super chat of the day, says, if England and India swapped Baz and Gautam Gambhir, who would submarine their teams more? So this is what Jared was saying the other day, that you've got to look at resources. Whatever mess Gambhir is in, he can get back up, because India still have a lot of talent. England have an old team which will struggle with respect to their pipeline. And I think that is beyond Baz or Gautam Gambhir. That is just, you know, cycles. And cricket is a sport, or any sport kind of works in cycles. You get talent droughts and sometimes you get a lot of players at the same time. But yes, it's going to be tough work for England now, because Baz ball as a notion will take a beating. Hopefully they can come back, but I don't see it happening. And if they lose all five, then surely someone loses their job, right, Rob?
Yeah, probably all of them. You know, Key, Stokes and McCullum. Probably all of those three. Mm-hmm. And probably Tresco as well.
Would you take Gautam Gambhir as England's next coach?
No, thanks. But it would be funny. And one thing that the England team do give us is never-ending content of stuff that is funny. You can't argue with that.
Like, yep.
They've been probably Absolutely. The best team to watch for the last 5-6 years because they're funny. The thing with England, you know, India get all the money, but England get quite a lot of the money. India are still really, really good at developing players. A lot of that is IPL, but, you know, there's plenty of other tournaments that go on. India's tank, if they could swap their first 11 for another 11, it'd be nearly as good. They've got loads of good players. England are, you just look across at the other lot that are playing on the tour, which is meant to be, you know, this guy can step in if this one fails sort of thing. They're getting walloped as well, so that's no good. England don't have much coming through. There's bits. There's bit we really do with some spin bowling, but they're not developing these people. They're saying, how we want to develop you is to bowl as fast as humanly possible. It goes further when they hit it, when you're bowling really fast, if you don't land it in the right place. What Stark has developed over 100 test matches of being developed by Australian cricket is the ability to bowl in the right place more often than not these days. And it used to be that he was the explosive tearaway, because he had Hazelwood just having it on a string at the other end over and over again. Cummins is a brilliant fast bowler, and Nathan Lyon tying an end down when one of those two is tired. But now Stark has had to go, I'll step up because I'm the old man. I'm the only one that's played all the test matches and I'm going to land it. And England identify that and go, well, what we'll do, the cunning plan we've got for their only good bowler is we'll just smack him off a length, driving on the up over again, but you keep getting out, so stop doing it. The present is bleak and the future's even bleaker. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah. Just on a closing note, because we're done with super chats, I just want to ask you, man, like, if England are to win a test match in this Ashes series, which might just be over already, how does it happen? Do they score 500 in one game and perhaps somehow magically bowl Australia out early? Because their bowlers don't seem to be capable of doing that currently. But what, chasing down 400? Is that their best bet?
Yeah. So I think so. The fun and the great success of this lot is doing mad chases. And I look at them and I go, well, they've got to chase 380 here, or they've got to chase 420. And unlike any other England team ever, they've gone, well, we're going to do it. So then you can all shut up. And to be fair, they did it quite a lot at the start, didn't they? Three of the best five chases they ever did in the first year of Baz ball.
Yep.
It was awesome. Honestly, when they're on the ropes as much as they are with the brains trust, for want of a much better expression, have made their decisions, don't wuss out now when you're just about to die. Fight and go, all right, look, they've all said we can't do this. Let's show them. Lads, let's go turbo nutso if we get a good pitch. And we're going to bat last. Let's go for it. Don't care how many we're chasing. There's always enough time to chase it if you're England, because of how we play and you know, we rattle through the game, not with overs, we don't, but by collapsing and whatever else. That is the way to come back, is up the volatility and go for it. And don't, you know, you've made this stupid comedy bed. Now's the time to lie in it. Don't jump out now at the last minute.
So yeah, listen to Rob, England, not Rob Key, I suppose, Rob Barron, and show us some fight. Come back into the series. If this is a 5-0 drubbing, no one's going to, or I'm not going to enjoy covering it. So I want some competition. Fuck, I'd even take Piers Morgan being right now. Like, if there's a 3-2 win this for the first time since 1936-37, Bradman's team, take my money. I'm all here for it. And as we have kind of finished up, there's another super chat. What about Asa Tribe? Great first class numbers. We did speak about him, Fox Savan, earlier in the show. You might have joined late, so you can maybe scroll back. I'm giving you 30 seconds to talk about Asa Tribe, Rob, before we finish this.
Yeah, I mentioned him quite a few months ago because I was lucky enough to, in the job I do, I watch a lot of cricket, and I watched him go three different places in three different formats and absolutely boss it in all of them, playing three very different innings. One with the tail, one on his own, and one in a first class game. I thought he looked the absolute business. And every time I saw him, he looked better. And every time I see him now, he got 50 for the Lions the other week and he got 100 odd not out the other day. He's an extremely hard guy to dismiss and he can gun it. So I think he might be the future. I said this some months ago. You've got to give England some credit. I mean, you shouldn't ignore somebody that's scoring 100 not out every time they bat across formats. But at least he came on this tour. At least he is batting for the Lions. And why, it wouldn't be a huge shock, would it, if he plays test number 5 when England are 4-0 down and they've tried all the other clowns. So he is a big hope. I just hope, beyond anything, that they don't ruin him and say, look, here we go. Here's your first test match. It's on a minefield. Your target is to score 50 off 25. Let the guy do his thing. Fingers crossed for him.
Perhaps there is a time in this Ashes series where England have to go tribal. And on that pun, I shall end this show. So thank you everyone for your interactions, your super chats. They're greatly appreciated. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, podcasts or videos. And as I mentioned at the start, you know, you can become one of our paid subscribers, you know, on Patreon, because those are the people who power all of our shows on the Good Areas Network. Go to patreon.com/goodareaspodcast, and that way you can enjoy ad-free content. You can talk to us exclusively. You can give us podcast recommendations. And yes, enjoy whatever remains, the three test matches in the Ashes series. Once it resumes, we'll be doing third inning shows again. And then I'll make sure to get Rob on for every single one of these, because it's just too much fun. So thanks for, you know, joining, mate. Thanks for that artificial hand wave. And we'll see all of you guys soon enough. That's all for today. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.